this is the last one that I want to do in the series of the Bible on training. And we've looked at three of those. The last one particularly, we looked at training in the Old Testament, focusing on the school of the prophets under Elijah and Elisha and others, and how they were specifically trained. But we couldn't really pass on the subject of training in the Bible without some reference to Proverbs, because there's a lot in Proverbs about training and instruction and the way of wisdom. So I want to do that certainly for the first part tonight. Under the heading of the spiritual benefits of training, we'll glean from Solomon's wisdom here in chapter 9 and a few other passages. And then I want to just make some personal reflections about how we can benefit from his reflections in our own lives as individuals and as a church, and how these views of training would benefit us in our spiritual growth. So first of all, Proverbs. So we'll start in chapter 9, but I will go to other places. The theme of this book, of course, is wisdom. Solomon, the wise man who is sharing his wisdom with us and those who want to follow God. Verse 10 of chapter 9, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Get that same phrase in chapter 1 that we'll look at in a moment. So he's not teaching just worldly wisdom. He's not just teaching how life works, but he's teaching how God works and therefore how life works for those who follow God. But there's a secondary theme all the way through the book, which is this theme of learning. Because wisdom, if you've not learned it, is not wisdom, is it? Wisdom is not information. Wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom is not advice. There's a massive difference between wisdom and advice. Advice can be taken and left. Advice can be rejected. But wisdom is something that is applied to the life. And so sometimes people get the book of Proverbs all wrong, don't they? Because they see it as just a book of old sort of sets of advices from an elderly gentleman that they can sort of take or leave. And of course, that's not what the book is about at all. So there is this undercurrent all the way through in this book of wisdom about learning. And lots of different words are used through the book of Proverbs for this same area of training. We have instruction, we have learning, we have training, we have teaching, we have discipline, we have rebuking, we have correcting. We have all those words and other ones as well, all the way through the book. So in a sense, you could say the whole book really is about training, spiritual training of children, of churches, of individuals, of husbands, of wives, of parents, of society, of leaders, of workers, all different kinds of relationships, all different kinds of instruction and training. Spiritual wisdom, not just natural wisdom. Now, there are lots of characters in the book of Proverbs, aren't there? And verse 13 of chapter 9 just gives us one of them, the woman folly. The women are not singled out because men are shown to be foolish through this book as well. But notice there's a capital F there in the NIV, certainly. The woman folly, describing somebody who's just a foolish woman. And there are characters all the way through this book that seem to have their own natural wisdom, or think they do. And we kind of identify with those characters naturally ourselves, don't we? There's the foolish ones we've mentioned. There's the sluggard, the lazy. There's the tearaway. There's the lust-filled. There's the wayward. There's those people that are proud in their own eyes. And these are our natural condition. They're the characters that we are in our natural condition. So the wisdom, if we're to learn from the book of Proverbs and be trained by this book spiritually, then actually we need to not just be the people that we are naturally with some advice. We need to be other people that we are not naturally, i.e. the spiritual, those that are growing spiritually. We need wisdom not just to give us advice, but to correct entirely the way that we're living. So in order to do that, in order to be wise, we've got to be those that are open and teachable. We've got to listen and apply. We've got to fear the Lord. So hence the emphasis all the way through this book on applying wisdom. Just flick back to the first chapter, first seven verses in the prologue. The purpose and the theme, we're told, is what the prologue's about in Proverbs. I'll just read these seven verses, but don't just focus on the words for wisdom and understanding and prudence and knowledge. They're the words we often focus on when you read chapter 1. But just while we read these seven, focus on all the verbs as to how you gain them. The learning words. Just look at the learning words as we read these seven. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, forgiving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. It's full of learning words, isn't it? What he's really saying is, I'm about to run a training school in spiritual living. And so we need these verbs, don't we? Verse 5, listening and adding to our learning. That needs to be us if we're being trained according to the scriptures. Verse 5b, we certainly need to get guidance. Verse 3, we certainly need to acquire a disciplined and prudent life. This is written that we might acquire those things. Not just that we might hear about them, or that we might be spoken of so that we feel guilty about not having, but that we might acquire. Verse 2, that we might attain wisdom and discipline. Notice that verse 2, those that are wise attain these things to get words of insight, but verse 7b, fools despise them. So there are different attitudes to training and learning, aren't there? And some people despise them and hate them, and those that are truly wise, those at verse 7, fear the Lord and begin on that road to knowledge and wisdom, then they are prepared to listen and to be instructed. Back to chapter 9 then that we started with. Chapter 9 gives us a comment on who we should teach and correct. It's got a mixture of these words that I mentioned already about correcting and rebuking and teaching and instructing and all those kind of words. But it's got this interesting division as to who can be trained. You've got these two people who are screaming out at passers-by. Verse 1, you've got this person called wisdom. This personification, this little picture of wisdom. And then verse 13, you've got this lady folly. And notice they're both doing exactly the same thing. They're screaming out at people in order that their lives might be influenced. This chapter is teaching that not everybody is easily trainable in the Christian life. Not everybody. There is training available in the scriptures. There is wisdom in God. There's wisdom in Christ. There's great wisdom in the scripture. But not everybody is easily trainable. There are consequences to the state of our hearts, the way that we are, that will either help or hinder the training that the Lord wants to give us in our lives. So we need to examine our hearts to make ourselves trainable under the fear of God in order that we might be trained. Let's look at the way wisdom trains, verses 1 to 6. It's this incredible picture, this metaphor of wisdom setting up home. Lots of us here have set up homes. There's a few just been set up recently. And you set up a home so that it's not just fit for you, but that it's welcoming for guests. And here's wisdom. She set up her home. This is a picture of her wanting people to come in and learn from it. So we've got this home, verse 1. It's a house with 7 pillars. Care and effort has been taken. Verse 2, there's food prepared and drink. And verse 5, people are invited to come and eat this food and drink. Come into my house. Verse 3, there are these inviters sent out, her maids, and they're sent out all over the place to the highest point of the city, calling out, verse 4, for people. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. So you've got this picture of all these people going astray, this picture of a massive crowd, and she's crying out, you're going astray with your lives, come in here and learn from me, verse 6, so that there's a change. Look, leave your simple ways, and you will live, walk in the way of understanding. So you've got the wisdom of God screaming out, saying, come and be trained, come and learn, come and have your life influenced by wisdom. There's great warmth in this. It's a welcome, it's kind, it's warm, but also it's serious. Verse 6, it's about life and death. We must leave our simple ways and live. And the consequences of folly. Contrast that then with verses 13 to 18. You've got exactly the same picture. You've got this loud woman folly, and she's got this house too. She's undisciplined. She's without knowledge. She's got nothing to give people except her loud voice and her pathetic proverbs. But she sits at the door of her house too, verse 14. She's also at the highest point of the city. She doesn't need maids to send out because she's got the loudest voice. You always find that the people with the most foolishness have the loudest voices. She doesn't need maids to send out. She can just scream at the top of her voice. And she's calling out, verse 15, to all that pass by. And notice she says exactly the same thing. Verse 16 and verse 4 almost exactly the same, aren't they? Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. All is exactly the same. So she's calling people in. But what she says is very different. Verse 17. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. She wants things to be covered up. Things to be stolen. She wants illicit relationships. She wants things that dishonor God, as opposed to those that honor God. And of course, verse 18. The consequences are disastrous. People go in there, they're dead. Contrast that with verse 6. You will live. But if you go to her, you go to the depths of the grave. And sandwiched between these two incredible pictures, we've got this section in the middle, verses 7 to 12. And this carries on the theme of crying out that people would learn. But it describes in the middle as to who we should teach, who we should train, and also whether we ourselves are fit to be taught and whether we're fit to be trained. In short, I suppose it says, are you walking the way of wisdom or the way of folly? And Solomon gives this description in the middle. And it's about correcting and rebuking someone. Look at verse 7. Fresh on the heels of this metaphor of this wise, wise woman wanting to teach well, she says, Scripture says, verse 7, whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. You can almost imagine the thought process that here we are, you've got this home and people are coming in, these simple people, ready for correction. And then you can imagine the thought process, well, but some of those people coming in are not ready to be taught. They're not ready to be trained. Sometimes that's been me in the hands of God, and sometimes it's been you. The Lord has had us in a situation. He's had us under his word. He's had us in a situation of conflict or difficulty or situation of disappointment or loss or grief or sadness. And we've been there in that situation, and I've been unwilling to be trained by it. And you've been unwilling sometimes to be trained by it. It's often us, isn't it? And we're in the right place. The wisdom is great, but our hearts have not been trained sometimes as they ought to have been. And so we've got this here in verse 7. Not everyone so easily comes into the house for training. This mocker doesn't really want to be trained, verse 7. He's described as a mocker and a wicked man. And he's not ready to be changed. He doesn't want to be corrected. Notice the double word, double verb in verse 7, to correct and to rebuke. This is clearly pointing out the error of somebody's ways, the error of somebody's life. You're not living right, Mr. Mocker. You're not taking the right road, Mr. Wicked Man. You're not living in a way which leads to life. You're heading for the wrong destination. There's a correction involved. Some stark words, some danger has had to be pointed out. And what's the result of that, verse 7? Well, an insult and abuse. I'm certain you've known the truth of that in your life. I'm sure that sometimes those of you that have raised teenage children, you've had insult and abuse from the children. Sometimes when you've had to correct our wrong path. I'm sure those of us that work in secular employment, we've had it from people in secular life. In all kinds of other areas of our lives. Sometimes when a word of correction is given, back comes the abuse and the insult. And so verse 8, Solomon gives us a lesson from it. He says, do not rebuke a mocker or he'll hate you. Don't do it. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. He's saying that, you know, there are times where you shouldn't throw your pearls before swine. Sometimes. That's not to say that everyone doesn't need to be warned of sin and death and judgment. Of course. But he's saying, you know, there are times, there are situations where when you know somebody's heart, when you know their situation, that really just to correct them yet again is just going to cause them to mock and blaspheme and insult and abuse. And it's just going to lead to hatred. Look, verse 8, he's just going to hate you. You're not going to win him and influence him just by always being negative and always being correcting and always rebuking. You know, there are Christians with that mindset, aren't there? And that their way of witnessing in the world, it seems, is just to point out the flaws in everybody else around them. And often you find those people are the butts of everybody's jokes. And all they do is get insulted all the time. I worked with a guy like that. He never had anything positive to say and witness at all ever about Christ. His only job was to seek to rebuke every single sinner around him. I never once heard him talking about the glory and the wonder of being saved or being forgiven or Christ, but just always how terrible, terrible, terrible was everything around him. And he was just, he was the laughing shock of the show. He was hated by everybody, and all he got was insults and abuse. A mocker is not ready to have his life corrected and trained. Whereas verse 8b, look at the difference with a wise man. Rebuke a wise man. Somebody that set out on that road, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Somebody whose life says, I want to be trained. I want to be trained and instructed in the way of God. Rebuke that man, and what will happen then? He will love you. It's the opposite response. The correction and the rebuke might be the same. The words might be the same, the wisdom might be the same, but the response is entirely different. All down to the state of the man's heart, the mocker or the wise man. It's his heart that changes the relationship. The wise man is quite prepared to let this be developing into a loving, respectful relationship. And verse 9, he'll be wiser still, look. Instruct a wise man, he'll be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, teach him, train him, instruct him. What will he do? He won't say, well, I know enough already, so I don't need your help. But he'll say, no, I need more. I'll add to my learning. Thank you for that. I thought I'd mastered that before, but clearly I haven't, because I've still spoken out of turn, and I'm sorry about that. And so clearly I've still got some more growing and learning to do. Instruct, correct the wise man, and even though he may have already learned that lesson, he realizes he's still got more to add to his learning. It'll help him on this road towards understanding verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. You see, the woman folly thinks she knows herself, and that is enough. So she's got a loud voice and is able to speak loud and invite others. But the wise man realizes he doesn't know God well enough. And so therefore, he sits at the feet of Christ and realizes he needs to know about the Holy One. He needs to know more of the Lord in order to grow in his understanding. And he's willing, this is the point, he's willing to receive some of that help and instruction and training in the Lord from other people. He's willing to be trained under God's hand and under the hand of others. It's an incredible thread, isn't it, through these verses about the state of the heart. And it applies to us in terms of training. If we go back through the verses, verse 10 is clearly a humble heart. A heart, you can't live under the fear of God without being a truly humbled heart, can you? Because God is great and he's all-knowing and he's awesome and we aren't. So verse 10 has a humble heart. So going backwards, verse 9, a man with that kind of heart realizes he's not finished or complete. And so he's lots to learn. Hence he wants to add to his learning, his or her. So verse 8b, that person is so grateful the Lord has sent someone or a situation into his life to be trained, he responds not with aggression or anger, but with love. Not so the mocker, verse 8a and 7, because the training there is not what they want in their heart, because they are mockers. The challenge for us is, to what degree are we that humble heart, or to what degree are we that mocker in our learning? There is life, verse 11. For through me your days will be many and your years will be added to your life. If you are wise, verse 12, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. There are rewards and benefits to walking the way of wisdom. There are consequences of suffering in this life and in the next, aren't there? To those who are unwilling to be trained, those that are mockers. How would we recognize if we are mocking in a situation when the Lord is about to train us? From someone else, from the scriptures, from the situation, from all those ways that we looked at in weeks 1 and 2, in the way that the Lord trains people. Maybe from somebody else younger than us in the faith, or younger than us in age. It's not always easy to learn from those younger. Maybe from somebody older that we don't respect, of a different generation, that we feel doesn't understand the needs of our generation. Are we willing, or are we mocking, when the Lord sends that training and that learning situation to us? The mocker doesn't want to receive anything. Just turn over the page to chapter 10, verse 8. It's got the contrast again between the wise and the foolish. I mean, there are thousands of these in Proverbs almost, aren't there? I'm just scanning over the surface today because we can't look at every proverb about this because we'd be here all week. But this verse here, look, 10:8, the wise in heart accepts commands. He's wise, he's open, he accepts them, he's ready to be trained. But the converse, a chattering fool comes to ruin. I like the ESV word there, a babbling fool. Chattering, babbling, lots to say. You see, the fool thinks he's got enough in his heart, so the only thing that's necessary is for people to hear, listen to him. So it's one-way traffic. It's coming out. I was on camp with 47 teenagers last week, and we loved them all. I can honestly say that we really did, but I've got to be honest, a few of them were babbling fools because it was only one-way traffic. For some of them, there was nothing coming in ear gates at all. There was nothing that eye gates were interested in. It was all just babbling. It was just coming out. That's all it was. They weren't open to anything at all. They weren't willing to accept commands or instruction or words of warning or anything at all. What a contrast. We've got to be willing to receive into our heart, not just to give out, because the end there, of course, is ruin, isn't it, verse 8? Not being trained under God's hand, but absolute ruin. The lesson in all of this is that the state of our heart is crucial as we approach the Lord's training. We can know of all the ways that we looked at before about how God trains. We can know that he trains us through all those situations, but it will not benefit us unless our heart is ready to receive in the midst of it. Unless our hearts are humble and meek, not hard and mocking. What a difference. Let's turn over a few pages. Proverbs 16 just underlines this. Proverbs 16, 18 to 22, just a few verses here. Now my guess would be that verse 18 of this chapter is probably one of the best known proverbs inside and outside the church, isn't it? Pride comes before fall. A lot of people know that proverb. But not a lot of people realize the context in which it's set. Let's just read from verse 18. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be lowly in spirit and among the oppressed than to share plunder with the proud. Whoever gives heed to instruction prospers, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. The wise in heart are called discerning, and pleasant words promote instruction. Understanding is a fountain of life to those who have it, but folly brings punishment to fools. This little section is actually about training. Pride comes before a fall is talking about those who are not willing to be trained and to learn. Hence verse 19 talking about the lowly in spirit, people that are willing to be open. And then look, verse 20, giving heed to instruction. We will prosper in our lives if we give heed to God's and others' instruction, if we're being trained. Blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. This involves a giving over of ourselves, of saying, well, we don't know it all. We need to learn from God. We need to have instruction from others. We need to trust in God. And we need to give heed to that instruction and to the wisdom that we know that we need in our lives. Verse 22 speaks about instruction as well. It just doesn't come through in the NIV very well. ESV has it better. Who's got an ESV? Anybody got an ESV? Can we have verse 22, David, in ESV? Thank you. See, that's got the word instruction, which is, it is the same word in verse 21, so it ought to be there, really. Instruction is right. It says punishment here in NIV in 22. I don't quite understand why that's there. It's the same word as 21. It's instruction. So the instruction of fools, it's worth nothing. You know, it doesn't gain you anything. Back to what we just said in the previous chapter. If you instruct a wise man, he'll learn. But if you instruct a fool, it's pearls before swine. It's not going anywhere. You see, the wise in heart, verse 21, are discerning. They're ready to be instructed. They're ready to give heed. But those that are foolish, those that are proud, they're not ready. See, it's not a matter of the quality of teaching. The teaching could be excellent, but their lives may not be changed because of their folly, and because their hearts are not pliable. A fool is never ready to be trained. And go over a couple of pages to chapter 19. You see the same in relation to giving and receiving instruction. Chapter 19, verses 18 and 20. And this links it with discipline of children. Chapter 19, verse 18. Look, discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. So you're sparing your son by disciplining, by training him. But then look at verse 20, just two after that. Listen to advice. and accept instruction. And in the end, you will be wise. So you've got this picture of somebody dishing it out to children. And the Lord says, will you yourself be ready to be trained and disciplined? You must listen to it. You must accept instruction. You must be open. If you cease to hear, then you'll go all over the place. Verse 27 of the same chapter, look. Stop listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. What are you going to say to anybody else then? How are you going to discipline your children? How are we going to help one another if we stop listening to instruction? So here's this hand upon all of us that we are to be open and ready learners. Last one, chapter 23. Looking over two more. Chapter 23, verses 12 to 17. And again, we get this double emphasis about those who train others but who need to be trained themselves. Verses 13 12. Chapter 23, verse 12. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. That's the corrective. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. My son, if your heart is wise, then my heart will be glad. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. Do not let your hearts envy sinners, but always be zealous for the fear of the Lord. And it seems to me we've got this wonderful double metaphor going on in that verse. You've got the father or the parent, let's say, with a child saying, do what is right, be trained, accept my guidance for life, and then your life will go correctly. But then it kind of zooms out from that to this massive picture of God with us. And it's almost then as if the Lord is then saying to us, because this phrase, my son, in 15, isn't just used in the context of the parent to the child. It's used in the context of Solomon to those who are learning the Lord's wisdom. So here's Solomon speaking on behalf of God. So it's not just the parent to the child, but God to us saying, my children, if your heart is wise, you who are disciplining your children and saying to your children, you want their hearts to be wise. But you, if your heart is wise, then my heart will be glad. Just as parents are glad when their children make good decisions and right choices down the roads of life. But it's an incredible picture of God rejoicing over the state of our hearts that leave us open to his training, which lead to the way of life. What an incredible picture. What a spur to be being trained. Verse 60, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. So this is our greatest motivation for being trained under God's hand, surely. Not just so that we'd avoid the way of death, we not end up in Sheol, as we saw in chapter 9. Not just that we go into the house of folly, or down the road of the adulterous woman, or the lustful man. But so that we might be trained to have our hearts like the heart of God. And then his inmost being will rejoice when our lips speak what is right. What a motivation for training. That's what the Bible says about training. What a motivation for it. Verse 17, ending up being zealous for the fear of the Lord. Oh, that we'd be zealous for that. Got this this sense of motivation and determination and enthusiasm in those that are zealous. Zealous to be learned. To be learners and to be trained. So if we grab hold of that, that's the end of Proverbs just for now. If we grab hold of what we've said about training, all these four sessions, and we apply that to our life, what will be the consequences for our spiritual lives? Well, I'm sure there'll be lots, but I just thought of a few here. All starting with this sentence. Holding these biblical convictions of training will do this in my life. Okay? So if we hold these convictions, not just today, but from the other sessions as well. If we hold these convictions, it will have effects on our lives. Here is what I think some of the effects will be. There'll be others. Number one, holding these convictions of training will change my view of suffering and difficult circumstances. It will. Because we'll see it as prospering the learning of our soul. We'll be able to say, like John Piper wrote recently, don't waste your cancer. He spoke in that incredible article that he wrote to his church about how God had used the scare of his cancer to train his soul in the thirst for eternal things and for spiritual growth. God sends us those situations. It will change our view of suffering if we have these views of training, that is what God is doing all of the time. Number two, it will connect what I hear with what I do. We struggle with that conundrum all the time, don't we? James 1 calls us to be not just hearers of the word, but doers of the word. And we struggle with that constantly, don't we? I do, and I'm sure you do. We struggle with that connection. We hear it, but putting it into practice. Well, if we hold these convictions, whether we receive instruction or not has a massive thing to say about the state of our hearts, and the state of our hearts has a massive thing to say about whether we're living under the fear of God and whether we're on the way to life and all the way to death. If we understand that all of that is related, then we will absolutely be keen to not only have what we hear, but what we do united and held together in our lives. In James 1, it's all down to verse 25. That's what hinges on it in James 1, isn't it? The difference between the hearers and the doers. Don't merely listen, he says, or you're deceiving yourselves. You'll be like a man looking in a mirror. But then verse 25. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting that he's heard it, but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does. So he's looking intently into the perfect law and realizing that it gives freedom. He's open to instruction from God. He's looking at the law of God. He's listening to the word of God and he says, this isn't a drag. This is freedom. Because it's wisdom from God. This is going to train my soul. And so he does it. He's got a view of training. I think that man in verse 25 has the Bible's view of training. And the Bible's view of training enables him to transform what he hears into what he does and lives out in his life. I suggest to you exactly the same happens in Matthew 7. We won't read it, but the men there, verses 24 to 27, the wise man that built his house on the rock, the foolish man built his house on the sand. It's all down to how they apply the word that they've heard. The man that hears my word and puts it into practice is like the man that built his house on the rock. That's the Bible's view on training. Holding that view will connect what we hear from God's word with what we do and put into practice in our life. Three. Slightly different. Holding this view of training that we've looked at will get me, whoever we are, will get me to explore how I can do some more word ministry. See, if we hold the conviction that one of the goals of training in every aspect is so that each of us can pass on the word. We looked at that, didn't we? It's being one of the main goals. One of the ways in which God trains us and one of the goals and the purposes for training. And one of the tools he uses. If we realize that that's one of God's intentions, then every one of us will want to explore how we can then put that training into practice by passing on the word somehow. I'm not just talking about preachers and those who give talks and epilogues either. I'm talking about every one of us. If you are a Christian being trained, there ought to be situations and opportunities emerging in your life where you can pass on the word and be involved in some word ministry. There ought to be. Surely the Lord will create opportunities and openings. You maybe feel that you're not able and equipped to do that. Well, there's something can be done about that. There can be some equipping and some enabling to help everyone to be those who are speaking and passing on the word. You'll want to be a spreader, a trainer of others, a gossiper of passing on the aroma of Christ through the word. So there ought to be that desire to find opportunities and situations in church life or maybe beyond where you can be involved in passing on the word of Christ to some others, maybe one-to-one, maybe in small groups, in different situations. I'm convinced that a lot more could be involved in passing on the word than historically we've allowed to do that. Not in an authority teaching way. I'm talking about in a sharing great news with somebody else. Which leads us on to point four. If we hold these convictions of the Bible's view of training, both from Old and New Testaments, then it will give the pastors of our churches some nice headaches. Right? You know, there's a massive difference between a nice headache and a bad headache. There's a massive difference. Both of them are hard to shake off, but one of them you really, really don't want, and the other you're quite happy to have. Well, I've got a few bad headaches at the moment, and I've got some really nice ones. I'd be really happy to have some more nice headaches. Here's a nice headache that pastors, well, I was going to say that pastors want, they ought to want, even if they don't. We ought to want it. People approaching them all the time with a thrust and a desire for more equipping and more training so that they can be involved in word ministry. What a nice headache that would be. People saying, I have this conviction about the Bible's training now. I have this, and I want to be involved in it, in receiving it and in giving it. How can I be more involved? How can I learn? How can I give out more? How can I be more equipped? I don't understand about this. I haven't got enough Bible knowledge. I don't really feel that I'm equipped to do that. How could I be equipped better? What a nice headache that would be. It would be a headache, but what a nice one. Wanting to be those people that are qualified and reliable. You remember we looked at those involved in training of others have to be those that are first proved and found to be qualified and reliable and suitable to train others. Well, what a great thing if people desire to be those people that are qualified. How can I be more qualified and reliable? Not just wanting everything to come from the front, but wanting to be involved. A degree of enthusiasm and compulsion for that. There's a church on the Isle of Wight, the church in Ryde. And they've got three apprentices starting themselves next month, just as we've got two here. We've been comparing a few notes about what they're going to do. And the pastor there, James, said to me recently that when he said to his church what he's going to be doing with the apprentices, there was a bit of an outcry. And a lot of people said in the church, well, James, that's not good enough. We're thrilled that you're teaching these three guys those things, but we want to learn some of those things as well. So how come you're just giving those to the apprentices? When he started talking about the detail. So he's had to reschedule the way it's going to work. So some of their sessions are now going to be split between an evening and a morning. And the evening is going to be open for people in the church so that they can come along and go through it as well. A whole number of people wanted to go through some of that Bible equipping. And then the sessions for the apprentices will be then on a Friday morning when others are in work. And he's very happy to do that. And he's having the open. And that was a challenge to me. And I thought, well, maybe we need to rethink ourselves some of the plans we've got. Maybe some of the things we've got in mind for these two young guys need to be open for others as well. I don't know. Maybe that's the case. We'll just see whether people are keen for that. They're also laying on some Saturday training days in line with their apprenticeship scheme as well, because they want others to be involved that aren't able to do it full-time as an apprentice. They're going to do little terms of 10 weeks with a Saturday at the end, doing it on a Thursday night and a Friday morning. But it just certainly got me thinking about this sort of groundswell of people saying, we want to be equipped ourselves in our daily lives, in our weekly routines, in the roles of church life that we have, in order to be able to equip and help others. What a nice headache. If we have the Bible's view on training, we ought to get more people involved, not less. That ought to be what's the opposite of converging? Thank you. It ought to be diverging, not converging, not narrowing down, but diverging out. Number five, these convictions on training ought to prevent us all being too isolated in our spiritual development. What do I mean by that? Well, there are two slightly different problems in church life, but related, aren't there? Those people that are isolated or feel isolated, and those people that are isolationist, people that shut themselves away. You know, sometimes it can be the case that other people aren't conscious that we're growing. You know, if somebody can be in the same church as you for 1 year and yet can say about you, well, I don't really know them, or I've not really seen them grow very much, then that's a sad thing, isn't it? Because we're growing up into a body, remember Ephesians 4. We're growing up, we are one body growing up into the head. So it oughtn't to be the case that people don't see us growing, because we grow within the body, within the family. That involves our strengths and weaknesses, of course. It involves different personalities, of course. It involves people that are more naturally outgoing and those that are more quiet and in the background. Of course, all those things taken as facts. But regardless of that, it ought to be evident to others that whatever kind of person we are growing within the body. It ought to be evident. There's lots and lots of scriptures for that. We shouldn't take ourselves away and isolate ourselves, saying, well, you know, nobody really cares. And also, we shouldn't be isolationist and say, well, it doesn't really matter. It's true that people do care, and it's true that it does matter whether our spiritual growth, our training in the Lord, is going on in view of the whole church. 1 Timothy 4, Paul talks to Timothy about his spiritual growth. And then what does he say at the end? He talks about his conduct 1 Timothy 4:11, command and teach these things. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. And he gives him a few other things in terms of his ministry. And then at the end, he says, verse 15, be diligent in these matters, give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers. The growth in Timothy's life, in faith and in purity, in speech, in love, and in growing his ministry, it was evident to all, everyone may see his progress, and it was a benefit to him and to those people that watched as well. So this growing and training in God, it should be evident to everybody. It'll stop us being isolated if we realise we're training alongside others. In 2 Timothy 3, the opposite is said about those people that are not truthful. 2 Timothy 3:9 talks about those people that reject the truth. Okay, he's just gone in a little section where it's those who are not willing to be trained and brought into line by the truth. And then it says 2 Timothy 3:9, but they will not get very far because, as in the case of those men, their folly will be clear to everyone. It's the same thing. It's evident. Whether we're growing in the Lord, that should be, everybody should see that. And if we're rejecting the truth and our life is going in the wrong direction, that should be clear to everyone too. People should really see the progress that we're making. Galatians 5, the works of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit, and then preceded by the works of the flesh, it says in Galatians 5 that the works of flesh are evident. They're evident. The NIV doesn't bring that word out, but it's there in the original. They're evident. They're plain. The works of the flesh are there for people to see. The fruit of the Spirit is there for people to see. It's not just isolated and tucked away in your heart. It's not right to say, well, the Lord has made me more loving this last year and I've grown a lot spiritually, but really, if you asked everyone in my church, nobody would know that. That ought never to be the case for us. That's not Galatians 5. 1 John 3, verse 10, very similar. It says there that it's very evident who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. 1 John 3, verse 10. This is how we know. Again, the word evident is in there. It's not brought out in the NIV. This is how it is evident. It is plain who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. Well, how? They look alike in their physiques. But it's talking about righteousness. It goes and says, anyone who does not do what is right is not a child of God. Nor is anyone who does not love his brother. So the doing what is right and the loving his brother is within the corporate communion. And it's an evident feature as to who the children of God are and aren't, because there are those that are growing and practicing in righteousness. That's not to say that our eyes are taken off God onto our brothers and sisters and what they think of us. But you understand my point, that learning should be evident to all. And I've got one more, number 6. These convictions about training will help us with these two difficult areas of the Christian life, submission and application. I've mentioned something about application already. In application, we will want to apply the word to ourselves in order that we can then show it to others. That's a difficult area of the Christian life. It will help us with that. But this area of submission, we will be learners, not just from the preached word, but we'll be learners from the lived word, lived out in people's lives. And we will be led to submit to those who come with that help to us in our life, because we'll have the Bible's convictions on training and realise that they will be sent by God into our situation in order to help us to grow and become the children of God. May God help us to have these convictions. May He help us to live these out in our life. May He help us to find the way of wisdom. And may He help us not just to be those that are being trained, but may we be those that are being trained in order that we might be able to train and equip others.